Welcome to the Sports Tech Research Podcast. We connect research-driven professionals working within the sports technology ecosystem. The show is brought to you by STRN, Sports Tech Research Network. Your host for today is Christophe de Meij.
Hi, everybody. Welcome again in the Sports Tech Research Podcast. Today, we're talking with Tom Jelliffe. He's a former Laval University student and the founder of a startup called Zooka. And he's on a mission to create the world's most durable sports earphones. We recently connected over LinkedIn, had a bit of email conversations, but I was wondering to find out more. So happy to have you here in the episode, Tom. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
The listeners don't really know that it's already the third time that we are trying to record it now. We had some technical issues, but that makes it maybe even more fun. But yeah, Tom, we always start with a bit the same question, a short introduction about yourself, your background and your field of expertise.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Tom. I graduated from Loughborough University with a degree in geography and business management. I then went and worked for Adidas in Singapore in their sports marketing department, which was phenomenal, but it also made me realize that I hated being a small cog in a large organization. And it was during my final year of university where me and my gym buddy broke 9 pairs of earphones in our final year. And we quickly realized that the sports earbud market was massively orientated towards runners. So I started a company called Zooka to develop the world's most durable sports earbuds. And we've conducted huge amounts of research and testing and have innovated far beyond purely unparalleled durability. We're working with some of the biggest R&D houses in the UK. And we've also just closed our second round of equity funding and are now in the final few engineering stages before we look to launch next year, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, it is. It really sounds like a really cool journey you already have been through. I was wondering, is it really a spin-out from Loughborough University or was it a side project during your studies and then became more mature afterwards?
Yeah, so it actually started. So we experienced the problem during my final year of Loughborough. And at the time, I was just about to do a module called Small Business and Enterprise. And I thought this is the perfect time to kind of explore this further. So did so, completed that. Luckily, I had that actually because it was the best mark I've ever got at university. But it's not a spin out. So Loughborough University, they don't have any stakeholding in my business at all. But what they do is provide fantastic support for graduate businesses. So they have a hub called The Studio, which is where kind of graduates go to take their business ideas. And they provide office space, funding, access to academics, and Loughborough have state-of-the-art research labs. So we're able to use that, which is brilliant for a small business.
Yeah, great. I would love to deep dive a little bit more into that, let's say, student entrepreneurship kind of support. You already mentioned they're offering quite some things for the students who want to start up their own company. In terms of the support you get, what's the type of services they offer?
So when you're a student, you get financial support, which is probably the key thing for starting a business. And a lot of that actually comes through the Santander scheme. So Santander provide a lot of university funding, which is amazing. And they also help you pay for interns effectively. So in the past, Zooka have hired 3 different interns, all of which has been paid for by Santander. So it allows us to kind of get different areas of expertise. Because when you're a small business, a lot of the time there's just you and your co-founder and you have certain skill sets and you have a huge amount of knowledge gaps in that team that you need to bring in. So, for example, my background is in marketing and I have no idea about kind of graphic design. So the first person we brought in was a graphic and product designer to help put our ideas on paper and on screen.
That was a student.
It was a student, yeah, exactly. It works for both people. So that student can then say, look, I work for this small business. Obviously, they learn a huge amount because they're chucked into the deep end. When you're a small company, if you employ someone, they pretty much become the sole person in that department. So we had we're now working with a student who actually went through that enterprise scheme, and he was our first ever employee. So it shows you that there are those massive benefits. So this person, a product designer called Jeff, is absolutely fantastic. But he was a student, but now on the side, he is head of Tezuka's product design, which is an amazing opportunity for someone who's still studying.
What's the amount of funding you get available? Is it a couple of hundreds, couple of thousands, couple of 10,000s? I mean, what's the range there that you get available from the university? And I can imagine it's equity-free money. It's money from some kind of fund within the university.
Correct. Yeah. So most of the funding within the university comes from kind of alumni, generous alumni who want to give back as well. So some of that comes from the Alumni Foundation. And as I said, a lot of it comes from Santander as well. It's all equity free. Yeah, the Loughborough, one of the few universities that don't take equity in a small business when they start, which is phenomenal. I've got friends who have set up businesses in different universities across the UK. And of course, pretty much the universities take 50% of their business. And therefore, when you look to raise funds, it makes it very, very hard. When you're a student, you can apply for something called the Lend Startup, which is £500, and it basically allows you to go and create a kind of proof of principle, something very simple, but it shows that your project works. And then after that, when you get into the studio, which is the graduate hub, you're then able to apply for £5,000. Obviously, they prefer it if you split it up into sections, so you can say, right, I want this for this and this for this. In fact, they won't give it to you unless you have very specific breakdowns, and you also need to provide three different quotes. So it shows that you've gone out there and had a look about what is available. But yeah, it's without that help, I would not have a business right now. There's no chance.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I also like the story behind, I mean, starting from a real life issue, in this case, the earbuds that broke down. What's the type of coaching or mentoring or workshops or whatever that you then got from the university in that first phase? I can imagine at a certain moment, you yourself and your co-founders start thinking about, okay, how can we build a solution and so on. What's the type of support you've got there in the initial stages?
Yeah, so the first thing that we needed to do was to make sure, are we just being silly? And is it our fault that we're breaking earphones?
Great question. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're on campus, you suddenly have this massive pool of people that you can go and talk to and ask them whether they've had a similar problem before. So to begin with, we effectively sat in the lobby of the gyms with questionnaires and just conducted some very basic primary research and found out actually this is not a problem that just we're having. It's a problem that a lot of people are having. And then so from that, we thought, okay, that's great. There is an issue here. Now, why is there an issue? So we looked at the earbuds in the market, the competitors out there, and we did some testing. So some very basic drop testing. And as I said, Loughborough have fantastic sports labs. So we basically went to the sports labs and said, right, we want to go and find out at what kind of impact these competitors break effectively. And what we realized from that testing is that nearly all earbuds are made in exactly the same way, where you have two pieces of plastic shell and some electronics in the middle, and you basically put the two pieces of plastic together, apply a small amount of adhesive or glue, and that's it. So as soon as there's an impact, they just pop apart effectively. So it was very good to realize that. And once you've realized why they break, it's far easier to discuss or solve how do we fix that. So that was our next step. But all that was free support provided by the university. So we were able to use the drop labs, which were fantastic. And then obviously we have access to academics as well. So we could go and speak to the materials department and the electronic engineers, which was, again, as a small business, was invaluable.
I can imagine at some universities, the researchers wouldn't start doing those testings without any funding. Why did the Loughborough University researchers did help you out for free?
I think the one part of it was because it was a very simple ask. We literally just wanted to put some earbuds on a weight drop plate and drop some weights on them. So it wasn't excessively innovative testing. It didn't have to be for the start. It just needed to prove a point. Another point would be that it was during, this is pure luck, but it was during the holiday times. So there were no lectures or anything going on. So these labs were effectively empty. And the other part is networking. So the person who was in charge of the Graduate Enterprise Hub was very good friends with the person who ran the sports labs. And she just said, right, can you do me a favor? And that's how a lot of life works.
Exactly, that always helps. Yeah, great to hear a bit the story behind and then how it actually started. You're in a more mature phase now, as you already explained. What were the crucial steps in the process to come where you are now at this stage?
So, as I previously explained, working with students is fantastic, and they are brilliant, but they are also limited to the certain kind of needs that you have. So, for example, if you're looking to get some graphic design done, students are brilliant. But when you want to develop your electronics, say, for example, you can't expect to have a student to develop world-leading electronics for an earbud without any kind of external help. So we effectively got it to a stage where we were able to show investors and basically prove our principle without needing any external funding. We did manage to raise a lot through Loughborough, which is great. But there came a time where we went, right, we now need to work with the big boys and really push this forward into something that's commercial. So using what we had, we went to investors. The first investment round took us 7 months. It was not easy. It was incredibly hard. And you learn a huge amount from it. But from that, we then ended up with the funding where we were able to talk to a company called the MTC, short for the Manufacturing Technology Center, who are based in Coventry. And if you haven't heard of them before, anyone who's listening, I do encourage you to look them up because they are a phenomenal kind of engineering design house. They're one of the biggest in the UK. And the benefit of working with them is that they have a huge amount of engineers under one roof. So if you want an audio engineer, a mechanical engineer, they can basically just pick and choose a team to suit you. And alongside that, they also have EU funding, which means that every pound we put in, they put in a pound as well. So if we had an invoice for, let's say, for example, £10,000, we would pay £5,000 and they would pay £5,000, which as a small business is so, I can't emphasize it enough, it's so critical to save cash. And then we also decided to start working with Newbury Electronics, who have a subdivision called Newbury Innovation. And these guys are the electronics team behind us. So they do all our kind of internal electronics and they work very closely with the MTC, who do the mechanical side of things, and basically are, as we speak, piecing it together.
Oh, cool. So those companies are involved as a subcontractor, so to say, for your project, or are they really also actually part of the company? No.
Yeah, purely subcontractors. So there's no equity or anything involved. So my main role really is the man who pieces things together by. I'll let the experts do their role and I'll just kind of manage that.
Yeah, I was about to ask what's your current role in the project, but you already answered that one. You also mentioned I learned a lot during those 7 months attracting the first investor. I can imagine for the listeners it would be interesting to hear bits, I mean those things you could share, to hear a bit your experiences, let's say practical learnings.
Yeah, so one thing I'll also touch upon your point about what did I do, and I think anyone who's starting a business has got to get to grips that they will end up doing a little bit of everything. So over the past 2 years, I've been a lawyer, I've been a product designer, an electronic engineer, an accountant, and anyone who wants to start a business has to prepare to basically get dirty and just dive in with everything. In terms of what I learned that don't always dive at the first opportunity. So we had someone who offered us some money, which was a decent chunk of money, actually. So we had at the time they offered us money, we had £1.70 in our business bank account. And they offered us £30,000, but they also wanted 10% of the company, which was less than half our valuation. And on one side, I had my mum and dad going, oh my goodness, this is great. Take the £30,000. It will solve a lot of your problems. And on the other side, I had me going, don't take it. It's half your valuation. You can't get that 10% back. And the £30,000 doesn't really get you to where you want to be. It was a very, very tough decision. And ultimately I turned it down. And it took me another 2 months to get another substantial offer in. At the end of the day, we got more than double that for 10%, which was great. And it also, I had numerous meetings with that investor. So I'd travel down to London, have a meal or just a drink with that person. And at the time, as I said, my bank account was pretty much non-existent. So spending £15 on a train ticket to London was quite a serious financial decision, which sounds silly, but at the time it really was. And I'm very happy to have gone through that as well. But so I ended up going down to London two or three times. And as I said, in the end, it resulted in no investment whatsoever. However, I had a phone call from an investor from New Zealand, and I spoke to him once, and he decided to put in quite a significant amount of money. So you have no idea where this money's come from. And suddenly in one day, your whole luck can change. But I found that investor through contacts and through networkings with another investor who didn't ultimately invest. So even though you may get a no from someone, if you can explore that further and say, okay, that's fine, but do you know anyone who may be of interest? That's probably the best way to go about it.
What gave you the confidence to accept that offer from the other investor? What made him a good investor?
Well, he invested at our valuation, so he didn't have any issues with us. So he put in as what we were asking for. But as a small business, you're always looking for smart money. So what do these investors bring apart from cash? And this guy, he made his money in the duty-free sector. And this is not a market that we had thought about at all. But since he's invested, he's put me in touch with some serious buyers who buy for the duty-free markets in Abu Dhabi. They supply Emirates and Singapore Airlines. And again, this is not a market that I had originally planned. But when you have a network or somebody in such a great position to infiltrate these markets, it would be silly to not accept it.
Exactly. Yeah, interesting. Going back a bit to the product itself, what's making it unique at this point? And yeah, what are the innovations, so to say, that you are working on?
Sure. So I can't say certain things, but I'll work around that. So the way that we've designed it, we're basically using a manufacturing technique which has never been used in earphones before. So by doing so, what that results in is effectively the first earphones in the world with an impact resistance rating. We've basically designed to be as tough as whatever workout you want to do effectively, so you can go and enjoy your music and not worry if any knocks, scratches, anything like that at all. But the way that we've made it also allows you to swim with the product. So you have a lot of earbuds out there that are waterproof, which is great, but Bluetooth only travels 6 inches through water. So unless you carry your phone with you whilst you swim and it has to be 6 inches away from your ears at all time, which means you're going to be swimming in circles, or you strap it to your forehead, which is not very feasible, you can't swim. But with ours, we've actually integrated 4 gigs of built-in storage. So at the tap of a button, you basically turn your earbuds into MP3 players, which means you don't need to take a phone with you. So you can swim with it, you can leave your phone at home, leave your phone in the locker room and work out without distractions effectively. It's also totally shockproof as well, which is quite cool. So it's effectively as tough as whatever your workout. So you can go from the gym into the shower, straight into the swimming pool without having to miss a beat of your favorite song.
Yeah, those are cool benefits for the end user. Using your mission, so to say, making the most durable earbuds, I was immediately thinking, or maybe there's also a sustainable material kind of aspect to the product. Is that the case as well, or?
No, that's not the case. But what it does do is it reduces people's kind of just general buy, use, break, throw away model, which happens so much. So a lot of the focus groups that we spoke to, you would have people who would say, oh, I spend £20 on earbuds and I usually buy or break 5 pairs a year. And when you try to explain to them that they ended up spending £100 a year, because obviously it all adds up, they didn't quite get that. And suddenly when it clicked and they're like, oh my goodness, I actually spend far more than I think. And obviously they are cheap, poor quality earbuds. So instead of sustainable materials, because that's very, very hard to do, it just reduces people's disregard and just the plastic waste purely through throwing it away.
Yeah, it's more about the life cycle of the product itself.
Absolutely.
Okay, we already talked about you working with those R&D type of companies as a subcontractor. What are technical challenges related to the product, as far as you can explain those, of course?
So the main issues we have really are actually the mechanical side of things. So regarding the electronics, we're not really changing the wheel here. It's the mechanical side of things, which is incredibly innovative. So as I stated before, we are using a manufacturing technique which has never been used in earbuds, which is very exciting. And it also means that when it comes to kind of copycat products coming out, it's very hard for them to copy our product because they need brand new machinery. So that's quite exciting. It protects us a lot. If you look at what happened with Apple, their molds just got copied by someone going in, putting a piece of plastic sheet down and hair drying over it. With ours, it's far more difficult because you need new techniques and you need certain types of expertise, which most companies don't have. So that's quite exciting. We're doing more testing at the moment. So we're really pushing it to see just what kind of impact it can take. As I said, the way we've made it makes it very easy for it to be watertight. So it's actually sealed from the inside out, which is the first of any earbud in the world. So even if water somehow breaks through the kind of plastic shell, it can't get to the electronics because the whole thing is solid. So it's protected, whereas in most sports earphones, or pretty much all sports earphones, they have a waterproof layer, and once that waterproof layer gets damaged or comes apart, water then seeps in and there's no protection on the electronics. So it's basically game over.
I can imagine some of the listeners ask themselves, when can we buy them?
So yeah, great question. So we're looking at the moment to launch kind of hopefully near the end of spring next year. We were predicting to launch in March, but unfortunately we had a COVID delay, which I think every business has had at the moment. It is what it is, but it also allows us to make sure everything's ready. So ideally by the end of spring, that's in place for now. We will be looking to crowdfund originally, actually. So we were looking to do a reward crowdfunding campaign. This product lends itself to that kind of thing. Platforms like Indiegogo are perfect. So that's very exciting. And as I said, being at Loughborough University, we have fantastic access to all these athletes and these world-class sports facilities. So I've already had chats with the Loughborough marketing team, and they're happy for us to kind of use some of their facilities to film in. So we're really excited for that kind of thing. And my main background, my main enjoyment is the whole marketing side of things. So I've put myself through 2 years of product design, and I cannot wait to actually start marketing this product.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's also the type of product that is really suited for what you just mentioned. Going back a bit to, one of the core elements of what we're trying to do as well with the Sports Tech Research Network is that link between academic research and more R&D or research-driven type of innovation than within industry or startups. Is there still a connection with Loughborough University or other universities, or do you see particular needs or opportunities for further collaboration between your company, maybe the other subcontractors and academic partners?
Yeah, so, I mean, Loughborough, they have fantastic facilities when you start a business and when you're kind of beyond that start stage. So there's a space called the Attic, which is basically a fantastic kind of working hub where you can go and hire an office, and you're surrounded by other fantastic kind of innovative sports businesses, which is just great because we've already touched on how important networking is. So that's really important. Of course, We have the athletes, like I just mentioned. So there is a huge amount we want to continue doing with Loughborough. The marketing side of things, again, you have 15,000 students. That is a huge amount of people that could potentially become heroes and talk about the product and market it. So a while ago, for example, we released our just some very basic T-shirts with our logo on it. And it was really cool to kind of go into the gyms on Loughborough and see people wearing our T-shirts. Like, it was quite a surreal moment, actually, when that happened. But it shows you the power you have with students. As I had originally touched upon as well, using the research labs for further research is definitely a possibility as well. So even though we branched out to use these subcontractors at the beginning, with what I know now and my personal experience, if we were to launch a V2 or if we were to launch a kind of over-ear headphone model in the future, there's so much more that we can do without having to get subcontractors involved and get them involved at a later stage and do the rest of it at Loughborough.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Of course, you're focused on the sports sector now. Any ideas about other markets where you could sell the product? Or maybe, there are also opportunities for other types of side projects.
Yep. So there's two that spring to mind. One of them is actually kind of stemmed from one of our investors, who is a lady who wears hearing aids. And there are no current hearing aids in the market that are waterproof, which is quite amazing when you think about it. So, for example, if she is to have a shower, she needs to take out these hearing aids and as a result loses a sense effectively. So there was a time when she was in a hotel, took out her hearing aids, and there was a fire alarm. And she wasn't aware that there was this fire alarm going off. And it's quite scary. So that's definitely a possibility to go into the hearing aid market. And the other obvious one for us is military. And using the manufacturing innovation that we've come up with and technique to actually develop military headphones, because they are still manufactured exactly the same way that other earphones are manufactured, whereas two pieces of plastic kind of stuck together with a thin piece of glue. You can imagine how kind of hectic and chaotic a military environment is. I'm sure there's a huge amount more breakage going on there. And we also have direct connections to the UK military, which is through our personal connections, which is very exciting. And it's definitely an avenue to be explored.
Yeah, cool. Bright future ahead, if I listen well to what you were saying there. What are you actually looking for? What are the current challenges? What could people who are listening could get in touch? I can imagine many of the researchers in many different fields immediately see some links related to what you are doing. But what, from your point of view, what are the challenges? Who are the type of people you would love to be in contact with?
Well, to be honest, as a blanket answer, I'd love to be in contact with any kind of people. I mean, you have no idea who knows who. Networking is a phenomenal thing. And honestly, for me, I believe it is the most important thing as an entrepreneur. And a quick example of this would be that my neighbour, who is a lovely lady, I babysit for her kids, or used to anyway, back when I lived at home. She actually got in touch with me and said one of my nephews runs a YouTube channel when they discuss and talk about earphones. And I thought, okay, it'll probably be some child who talks about how he likes his AirPods or something. But actually, it's this guy who has over 25,000 subscribers, and he does a really good breakdown of kind of the latest earphone tech. And to be put in touch with him through my neighbor is just bizarre. So if anyone out there wants to get in touch, I mean please do. Go on LinkedIn onto the Tezuka page. You can find all the information you need there. But yeah, always excited to kind of network. It's, as I said, it's key in life.
I can only agree with you, Tom. These kind of conversations, I normally end with asking, what's your favorite product but I can imagine in your case, it's your own earbuds. But besides those, is there anything else that you really love, and why is that?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. And obviously, my earbuds do spring to mind, but I think that would be beside the point. The other product, and I have to say, I've admired this brand for years, and that's actually GoPro. I really like GoPro and what they're doing. For those of you who don't know, they're kind of seriously action sporty cameras. And I just find their marketing really good. Their website at the moment is phenomenal. I can see links between what we're doing at Suica and GoPro as well, because obviously when they first started out, they were super durable, tough cameras, and now they've kind of transitioned into more action-y, kind of sporty cameras. So before, they were purely durability. They didn't care about anything else. It was just, look at us, we're super tough. And now it's like, we're super tough, but we also have these other amazing features, which is what I think Suica are now at that stage. My answer to your question is GoPro.
All right, cool. Well, with this, I'd like to end the conversation. It was really interesting, Tom, to hear your story. I'm always excited to hear how students at certain moments, and that's what I love in your story as well, their experience a certain problem and really bottom up start to create a solution. Of course, I wish you all the best with the next couple of months. I can imagine with your expertise in the marketing field, the most exciting part is still yet to come, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Tom, for your time and your insights. To those listening, of course, thanks for your time as well. And see you soon. Bye-bye.
This was a SportsTech Research Podcast. Podcast presented to you by STRN, an initiative of Ghent University. Did you like this episode? Make sure to check out our website strn.co and let's get in touch.